The next case is 08-1725, State of Ohio versus James Lester. Mr. McFaul.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, Ms. Jones. Your Honor, at this time, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Watch your time there.
This is a unique case. I think the question that ultimately comes before the court, this court, is how unique is James Lester's case? Is it unique enough where the statute in question, the aggravated robbery statute under 2911-01A1, is substantially similar to another statute in which this court unanimously held was a strict liability statute, that being the robbery statute of 2911-02A1 in State versus Wharf? And the state argues this morning that it is. Also, is the additional element between those two statutes of displaying, brandishing, or indicating possession or using a deadly weapon, is that simply an aggravating factor to an offense whose specific intent element has already been judicially interpreted? That would be through State versus Wharf in that particular statute of robbery, with just the addition of that language making it an aggravated offense. And the answer to that question from the state is yes. It was also apparently the answer of numerous districts, including the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 10th, as well as the Ohio Jury Instruction Committee, when they applied by analogy Wharf and did not add the language of recklessness to mens rea for aggravated robbery.
In Wharf, there was no brandishing of the weapon, I don't think, was there?
I don't believe so in Wharf, Your Honor.
There is here.
There is a brandishing of the weapon in this case. It was a knife, Your Honor.
Is that not a significant distinction between Wharf and this case?
Well, if it's enough to take the additional element from a strict liability to just a mens rea of recklessness, I don't believe so. And I would argue that Mr. Lester's case procedurally fell in the Cologne gap. Right. Cologne 1 was released, then Mr. Lester's decision was released by the First District, and I think 2 weeks later, Cologne 2 was released by the court, in which the court clarified and confined that decision of Cologne to the specific facts of that case.
Should we let the Court of Appeals consider the application of Cologne 2 then?
I think that the Court of Appeals should, and that leads me to my next distinction about how unique Mr. Lester's case is in this particular matter, where if Cologne was indeed confined to the facts of that particular case with that particular statute, which is not at issue in Mr. Lester's case, and again, there's no objection to that at any point. And unlike Cologne, and what's been noted by the First District in its opinion, the trial court correctly instructed the jury on what would have been the proper mens rea element, and that was knowingly. But the court said it was without consequence because at inception, the defective indictment tainted the entire process. Now, when you look at the offense of robbery and you look at the analysis given to that offense in Wharf as it relates to whether or not this deadly weapon is a strict liability offense, I think it's important to note that there's the predicate theft offense underlying all of these statutes that's defined, or that's not only noted, but as part of the statutes that are in question. During the commission of a theft offense or fleeing immediately thereafter, along with the citation to the statute for theft offense, which is knowingly, it almost seems that the predicate offense, the theft offense, which has been aggravated by these other factual distinctions, is almost ignored in the aggravated robbery statute than treated as if it has no mens rea element at all, which in order to find it, you must first find the theft, which has the mens rea element of knowingly in it.
Is that the reason you think for on page 9 of the Court of Appeals opinion, I don't quite understand the parenthetical statement. In this case, the trial court correctly instructed the jury on what would have been the proper mens rea element, i.e. knowingly, had that element not been omitted in the indictment. Does that ring correct to you, or is that?
Well, I think it distinguishes Mr. Lester's case even further from Cologne, where there's no mention that that there's no mention in Cologne about any type of mens rea that was offered at all, and that it was reckless a standard, and that the court erred by not instructing on reckless. Here, you can argue, and we do argue, that if there was error, and again, I would submit to the court that there's not error because it's a strict liability offense, and therefore a mens rea requirement isn't necessary in the indictment. But if there's error in the defect, is it cured when the court, in admonishing the jury and then giving the jury instructions, defines and further in the charge for aggravated robbery in this particular case, defines the theft offense as well as the mens rea of knowingly? That happened in this case. And if Cologne is to be applied just to those particular facts of that case and this structural error analysis that the court goes into be applied in only rare cases which multiple errors permeate the trial, then at this point, at that most important point of the trial, the jury was given a mens rea to consider in this particular case. And I don't think that it can be held in this particular, Mr. Lester's particular facts, that the defense of his charge was built around the mens rea element of the offense. And the court looks at the transcript of this trial, it's apparent that the argument and the attempt for counsel was to attack the credibility of the witnesses. Not that it happened, but it happened in a reckless fashion, or not that it happened with some other fashion, was that it didn't happen at all. So it didn't affect Mr. Lester's ability to present a defense in this case. His defense was strictly based on the credibility of the witnesses presented in front of the court.
Mr. McFaul, you're attempting to distinguish Cologne in this particular case. And as you know, we have had many cases that are reading Cologne very broadly and saying that every indictment needs to have a mens rea listed within the indictment. Do we have a number of these cases? I mean, let's assume that we would find in your favor here and modify Cologne to the extent of this particular offense. If we were to do that, would we then have to wait for the next case to come along and see if that offense had strict liability components so that it could be distinguished from Cologne? I mean, the point was, in an indictment, if there's a defect under 7D, there can always be an amendment to the indictment. And the idea of recklessness being a default mens rea was not accepted by the majority of the court. But, you know, this is a concern, I think, that we have about going crime by crime and offense by offense and determining what has the strict liability component and what does not. Can you respond
right
to that?
Right, and I think that what that potentially opens is a similar situation that the court is facing when it deals with the issues of allied offenses of similar import, mm-hmm. where every case comes up, it's fact-specific and it's another test. This particular case, again, I've substituted in for Ms. Lapp from my office, and I'm happy to do that. She cites a number of cases from a number of jurisdictions that, even after Cologne, have found that Wharf is still the controlling law when it comes to aggravated robbery. They do their argument by analogy, and as I mentioned at the beginning of my argument, I think it's the appropriate argument, and that the addition of that element of brandishing or indicating possession is just as strict liability as having it on their person. And I haven't seen a real distinction between those and don't think that one's required when it comes to the mens rea element. But a number of jurisdictions, and I believe that I had cited that before, from the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 10th since Cologne have reaffirmed their belief that Wharf is going to specifically apply to the statute in Mr. Lester's case. So there would be a number of opinions that have already been authored by various jurisdictions in the state, as well as I had mentioned, the reluctance of the Ohio Jury Instruction Committee for putting recklessness on this particular statute also. So yes, I think there would be a lot more work should the court decide that Wharf is not the appropriate case authority in this matter, and hold that aggravated robbery, even with just the addition of brandishing a weapon, requires an element of a mens rea element of recklessness, as opposed to what the court unanimously held in Wharf. Again, the first district noted in their opinion, and Chief Justice, you brought that up again, that the trial court correctly instructed the jury. And in that particular case, again, I have to ask, is Mr. Lester's case so unique? Is it so much like Cologne that Cologne would apply in this structural error analysis that the judges in the court in the first district gave it? Or does it fall under more the plain error analysis, where the defect did not permeate the proceedings? And I believe it's our opinion that when you look at the record, you can't see that the proceedings were permeated by some error regarding mens rea, and that was never the issue in this particular case. Again, because you got to determine how unique Mr. Lester's case is before this court. It also, when I look at some of the arguments about adding recklessness to some of these serious offenses, especially aggravated robbery, a question somehow how one commits an aggravated robbery recklessly. And I have a difficult time coming up with a fact scenario where it's recklessly committed. And, you know, I'm, you know, the newer kid on the block in our division, and so I get a lot of weight and sufficiency cases to argue in the first district. And I've struggled to find a fact scenario that with recklessness, if that was the fact, or indeed recklessness, how somebody could be convicted of that crime and how that conviction could stand on a simple sufficiency challenge above. Knowingly that act, that it's going to bring a probable result versus recklessly, would it be a possible result when you put that together with the statute of aggravated robbery and the underlying knowingly mens rea for the predicate theft offense? It's our opinion that Wharf is the authority that should be followed. We ask the court to reverse this case under that authority, further narrowing the scope and application of Cologne in the process, and affirming what the district courts around the state, as well as the Ohio Jury Instruction Committee, have done. Unless the court has any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McFaul.
Thank you.
Ms. Jones.
Chief Justice Moyer, may it please the court, Mr. McFaul. My name is Christine Jones, and I represent the appellee, James Lester. Your Honors, the issue in this case is simply this. Is there a distinction for purposes of assigning a mens rea between mere possession or control of a dangerous weapon, as opposed to the acts of brandishing, displaying, using, or indicating possession of such deadly weapons?
If I understand correctly, the acts of possessing or controlling have a strict liability mens rea under
Wharf. That is correct, Your Honor.
How do you brandish, display, or use without possessing or controlling?
You do both, Your Honor. Mere possession under the robbery statute section 2911.02a1 is enough for a theft to be elevated to a robbery. However, in order for a theft to be elevated to an aggravated robbery, the additional elements of brandishing, display, using, indicating possession also must be present.
So we've said, as a matter of legislative intent, strict liability applies to the fact that you have the gun in your possession
which creates obviously a risk of harm because you're now engaged in a criminal activity.
That's correct.
But if you take it out, threaten to use it, wave it around, you know, safety may be on or off, that doesn't increase the risk of harm. I don't understand the public policy argument of the legislative intent to where if you show it and threaten to use it, you're less culpable and not strictly liable than if you just hold it and the victim never sees it. That logic doesn't make sense to me. So explain to me why one would be strict liability, but you would only be reckless if you actually threatened to use it.
Well, in strict liability, for the mere possession, Your Honor, the offender doesn't truly have to do anything. It simply has to, a knife can be in a pocket. That's mere possession or control of a deadly weapon during a theft, which elevates it to a robbery. However, in 1996, the legislature changed the aggravated robbery statute section and added these additional elements of brandishing, displaying, using, indicating possession. Obviously, the legislature wanted the offender to do something, to brandish, display a deadly weapon in order for them to be convicted of aggravated robbery.
And you maintain that recklessness is the standard that applies?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So then explain to me, how do you recklessly display a brandish? Oops, it fell out of my pocket. I didn't mean for it to fall out of my pocket. How do you recklessly do something like that?
Your Honor, that's possible. If it does fall out of your pocket, you're not recklessly displaying or brandishing it. This court addressed a similar issue in State versus Cologne, and I believe that State versus Cologne is actually, it actually supports Mr. Lester's position. In that case, this court found that the mens rea of reckless attached to the actions of the offender in attempting to inflict, inflicting, or threatening to inflict physical harm. In that regard, the court recognized that the offender had to do something, and they had to do that recklessly. In this case, similarly to State versus Cologne, Mr. Lester would have had to recklessly brandish, not just possess, but the offender would actually have to do something in order for the mens rea of reckless to attach and for them to be convicted of the aggravated robbery. It appears that the change in the legislature in 1996, whereby these additional elements were added, signified a legislative intent to increase the elements for aggravated robbery, as well as to elevate the mens rea for aggravated robbery as compared to simple robbery. The change in 1996, the revision of the statute, also seems to indicate an intent that would go against what the state's contention is in their brief, that there is a scant difference between possession and indicating possession. That is not a scant difference. In fact, in 1996, indicating possession is what the legislation, one of the elements that the legislature added in order to elevate the offense from robbery to an aggravated robbery, theft to robbery to an aggravated robbery under 2911-01A1. Your Honor, this court in State versus Lozier in 2004 also stated that if a statute did not name a culpable mental state, and also if the statute did not plainly indicate a purpose to impose strict liability, then the catch-all recklessness mens rea would attach under 2901-21B. Similarly, in this case, the aggravated robbery statute does not state that there's any mens rea attached to it, and it also does not plainly indicate a purpose to impose strict liability. Therefore, the catch-all mens rea of reckless should attach to the aggravated robbery statute. Your Honors, the distinction between mere possession and the acts of brandishing, displaying, using, indicating possession, as I've stated, are supported by this court's decision in State versus Cologne. But Mr. Lester contends that this court's decision in State versus Wharf also supports his contention that aggravated robbery mens rea should be reckless in regards to the brandishing, using, possessing, indicating possession of the deadly weapon. In the court's opinion in Wharf, they were very clear to distinguish, this court was very clear to distinguish the former 2911-01A aggravated robbery statute in comparison to the current 2911-01A1 aggravated robbery statute. This court was very clear to distinguish mere possession from the actions that are now required, the affirmative actions of brandishing, displaying a deadly weapon in order to make the theft be elevated to an aggravated robbery. On pages 378, there were also two other instances where this court distinguished mere possession from displaying, brandishing, indicating possession of a deadly weapon. First, the court justified its holding that the robbery section under 291102A1 was a strict liability offense when it distinguished mere possession or control of a deadly weapon as opposed to actual use or intent to use. Then further on in the decision, the court stated that no use, display, or brandishing was necessary for robbery, seeming to further distinguish robbery from aggravated robbery, mere possession from the display brandishing that's required in aggravated robbery. Your Honors, the Seventh District Court of Appeals decision in State versus Jones back in 2008 also supports Mr. Lester's position. In fact, that court gave an excellent analysis of Wharf, this decision's in Wharf, and an excellent analysis in distinguishing possession versus actually doing something, distinguishing the strict liability, the robbery's strict liability as opposed to the mens rea of recklessness required under the aggravated robbery statute section 291101A1. That court also cited this court's recent decision in State versus Davis, a 2008 case, where this court sent back an aggravated robbery conviction under 291101A1. The conviction was sent back to the 8th District Court of Appeals based on the authority of State versus Colon. And that case was sent back after this court decided State versus Colon 2. Your Honor, there are a number of contra cases that are cited in the state's briefs. However, many of those cases have flawed analysis. The Second District Court of Appeals decision in State versus Smith from 2008, as well as the Third District Court appeal decision in State versus Jelks, also from 2008, state that Wharf held that the aggravated robbery section was a strict liability offense. That's simply inaccurate. The court in Wharf held that robbery was a strict liability offense, not aggravated robbery. The Fourth District Court in State versus Haney from 2009, Sixth District Court case in State versus Harrison from 2008, they seem to rely heavily on State versus Ferguson, the 10th District Court of Appeals decision, but gave no analysis or reasoning as to why aggravated robbery should be a strict liability offense. The case out of the 8th District in State versus Peterson from 2008 also cited Wharf, but again did not distinguish mere possession from brandishing, displaying, using, or controlling. Finally, Your Honor, the State versus Ferguson case that is relied upon by many of the courts of appeals from 2008 also did not distinguish mere possession of a weapon from brandishing, displaying, indicating possession, or using the deadly weapon as required in the aggravated robbery section. In fact, they relied on the Ohio Jury Instructions Committee comments, which after Colon, the committee had added mens reas to several other statutes based on the Colon, but chose not to do that for the aggravated robbery statute section under 291101A1. Although the committee only commented that they were comparing it to Wharf and believed that the aggravated robbery section was analogous to Wharf, but they gave no reasoning. So their comments were unpersuasive, as is State versus Ferguson, by relying on their comments as well.
Ms. Jones, I'm trying to understand how the Colon case is being used currently. Beforehand, if an indictment just recited the elements of the crime as the statute had stated, the indictment was considered sufficient, at least pre-Colon. After Colon, it was only a strict liability statute or a strict liability offense that could use the language of the statute as it was. Because it was strict liability, you needed nothing more.
That's correct.
But because of Colon now, if it's going to be other than a strict liability offense, if it's reckless, if it's knowingly, purposefully, those mental states need to be added to the indictment.
Absolutely.
Is that the position that the practitioners are taking now?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And it would also appear to be the position of the Ohio Jury Instructors Committee as they changed the jury instructions for several offenses based on the Colon decision.
Okay.
Ms. Jones, let me ask you what is, you know, this wasn't brief, but page 9 of the Court of Appeals opinion, there's this reference. Court of Appeals is discussing Colon and then says it failed to properly notify Colon of the charged crime. It led to effect of jury instruction from the state to imply the crime was strict liability offense. And then in parens, in this case, the trial court correctly instructed the jury on what would have been the proper mens rea element, i.e. knowingly, had that element not been omitted in the indictment. What does that mean?
I was initially puzzled by that, Your Honor, but as I reviewed the decision, it came to my attention that I believe the Court of Appeals meant the underlying offense.
Must be referring to the theft offense.
That was my understanding. I don't believe the first, although it's Mr. Lester's contention that the first district came to the proper decision in vacating his conviction, the analysis did not include anything in regards to these elements of brandishing, displaying, and what the mens rea would be for those particular elements, whether they would be strict liability or, as Mr. Lester contends, that they should be reckless.
Should that cause us any concern about whether we have the proper issue before us, if the Court of Appeals?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think that the Court of Appeals did not understand that brandishing, displaying, using was a separate element with a separate mens rea. I think that I really do believe that the knowingly attached to the underlying theft. Your Honors, therefore, based on this court's reasoning in State versus Wharf as well as State versus Cologne, Appellee James Lester respectfully requests that this court attach the mens rea of reckless to the aggravated robbery statute section 291101A and affirm the First District Court of Appeals decision vacating his conviction.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. Mr. McFaul, you've saved 2 minutes of your time.
I'll waive rebuttal at this point, Your Honor.
All right. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.